Welcome back in, everyone, to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are bringing you one of our favorite Shakespearean works being produced by the Access Theater Company. And joining us to talk to us about this, we have the dramaturg and script adapter, Mark Palmieri, and the performer playing the role of Viola, Britt Jenilin. They are part of Access Theater Company's presentation of Twelfth Night, which is playing April 24th through May 25th at the Access Theater. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting accesscompany.org. This is such a wonderful story, such a great show. As I mentioned, it's one of our favorites. So let us go ahead and jump into things by welcoming on our guests. Mark, Britt, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Great to
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm so happy you're here today. I'm so happy that we're talking about this play. And this particular iteration that you're all part of is really fascinating. So, Mark, how about we start with you? Can you tell us a little bit about what Twelfth Night is and is about?
Well, you know, like every Shakespeare play, it's about many things. And it would be certainly classified as one of his comedies, in particular romantic comedies. And I think most of Shakespearean romantic comedy has much to do with self-discovery and growing up and moving from a place of self-involvement to the wonderful awareness of the importance of someone else. And in that way, it's about how falling in love makes us better people. And so that is certainly one thing that it's about. You know, again, Shakespeare, in even in a romantic comedy that can from afar be pretty silly looking, manages to engage deep and tumultuous aspects of human life as well. And so it's a play that also is about being alone and tragedy and loss and hope and the importance of living on even after catastrophe strikes. And so I can go on probably with 10 other things that it's about, but that to me, you know, that those are the things that I celebrate about the play probably first.
That's so lovely. Now, this particular story has been adapted by you, as I mentioned. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Like, what exactly have you done to adapt the script?
Well, I hope an audience that knows the play comes in and says, boy, it didn't feel like an adaptation at all. It felt like Twelfth Night, you know. that's the hope. So the Axis House style kind of influenced this a little bit, where we, you know, try to kind of keep it under that 80-minute mark usually. And so sort of had to decide what was going to be cut in the play. That was really the first aspect of the adaptation. How do I streamline this and kind of keep it moving? Because, you know, I love every word of the play. So it's not that I felt there were things that were unnecessary in the play, but with the priority being the action of the play and the themes we were going to be emphasizing, I sought to shave the experience of maybe the more colloquial and more academic things about the play that an audience, a contemporary audience that wasn't necessarily Shakespeare scholars, could do without as the experience moves along. We did some intercutting of scenes that overlap that don't do that in the script, again, to emphasize some of the ideas. There are, and again, my hope is that it's unnoticeable, but there are some tinkering. There's some tinkering with some language to just help the audience know what is being said. Some words that we don't use anymore. Very, very simple things that help sentence structure, etc. Just to help it a little bit land without, again, affecting the verse, affecting the iambic pentameter. So in general, the adaptation is to deliver a traditional feeling script with momentum and with having it in mind that we don't want an audience to feel alienated by, say, a number of mythological references or allusions that they may not know and that the Elizabethan audience would have known very, very well. So that's what it's, the priority was accessibility and momentum. So I hope, I hope we achieve that.
Very cool. Love that. Now, Britt, I want to come to you, and I'm curious to know, how did you come upon this particular production?
Well, I've been a member of Access Company since roughly 2007. So in and out, I'm not always in every show, but when a part comes along that I might be right for, I get to come in and read. And this part has been like, it's funny because when we first started reading the play, we were sitting down for table reads, and it seemed, Viola seemed like the correct role, and I was reading it one way. And then we started talking about maybe Britt should read Olivia, maybe she should read Viola. And I thought I saw more comedy in one of the characters, only to realize that, like, there is, every time you read the play, there is a new discovery in character. It's been a really, really, really fun. Honestly, even if it didn't go up, this has been like such a wonderful experience doing this piece. But yeah, I came to it of luck of being in the company and reading the part. Yeah.
Amazing. And I kind of want to snowball off of that. And I'd love to know, as we are about, less than 3 weeks away from opening, what has it been like developing this new iteration of this classic?
One thing that I thought when we first started rehearsals, we've done at Access, we've done shows that are fairly large. This is the largest cast so far. So there's 12 cast members along with two musicians. So 14 people on stage. It's a very intimate theater as well. And I think we did a couple table reads, which was wonderful to get the language in our mouths, right? Because like not everyone has performed Shakespeare on a regular basis. So it was a great experience to, form your mouth around the words, read it multiple times together, kind of go through, ask questions. And then we got up on our feet and we had a discussion one day because a couple of us kept swallowing these words and realized that it's a very modern thing to close your voice off, right? We're looking at our phones, we're on our computer, you're constantly pushing down or bending your body in a way that doesn't help. It doesn't, sometimes it hurts, but it definitely doesn't help. And so during rehearsal, we decided to stop and do like a big breathing exercise and shake ourselves up and do some yoga. And that led to realizing how often when we experience an emotion, when we're walking with grief, when we're holding on to grief, we're not silent. Like even when not speaking, you're using your breath work, you're breathing, oh, frustration and joy is ha, right? And it led to the cast right now, we spend a lot of time breathing together and finding moments where even if it's not in the script and it's not the words you're saying, that emotion can come out in a very beautiful way through just simply through your breath work. So that whole experience it's led to so much. It's led to so much discovery and moments. And as Mark was saying, there's a couple of scenes, that kind of overlap and weave together. And I'm going to keep going on about this because it's exciting. But the breathing work that we've been doing has also now branched into the set design. It's branched into the costume design. The costumes, Carl Ruchtescheld with Jess Gertz, they're designing these costumes that... I don't want to ruin the surprise in any way, but at moments breathe with the character. The set itself is alive and breathing. And so there's, that's been kind of a big discovery for us. I don't know how that, I think it enhances the script. I don't know if that's possible because the script is phenomenal and it's Shakespeare, but yeah.
That is truly wonderful. I love how much you mentioned about the breath and everything, because I do think that is a very, very important part to the art of acting. Mark, I would love to know, is there a particular message or thought that you are hoping audiences take away from this show?
If they've never seen Shakespeare, I hope the message is see more Shakespeare and read Shakespeare because you loved it so much, you want more. But from directly from the from Shakespeare's work, I love the play because it insists on life over mourning. Everyone has and will know loss and disaster. And the play preaches that we must and we are right to celebrate and embrace the life-giving and happy things about this gift of being. And while we can, you know, have carnival as much as you can because Lent is around the corner. And I think that's the spirit of the comedy. There are dozens of lines I can quote to support that in the play. But I think that's it. I think it's saying that, you know, that this is what the world wants of you. It wants you to live your life in spite of the temptations to give up. And that's what I hope they take away. Other than, wow, I want to see more Shakespeare plays.
That is a wonderful thought. I love that. And I really hope that audiences come and they have that same thought. Read more Shakespeare. It's beautiful language. My final question for this first part, I'm going to throw to you, Britt, and that is, who do you hope have access to this production of Twelfth Night?
I think it'd be easy to say everyone, right? But I grew up in very, very, very small town Alabama, and we didn't have theater. We didn't have, you know, you had to drive 45 minutes to see anything. And so I didn't read Shakespeare until I moved to New York at 18. And when I first read it, I hadn't studied it. I hadn't read it prior. I didn't have anyone to kind of like guide me along. And it created kind of like a, not an animosity, but I didn't know it. And it felt very highbrow. And it felt like something I couldn't quite connect to and I didn't see myself in. And now, obviously many, many, many years later, it's so relatable. It's exact. And the jokes, the writing of the jokes, you laugh as much now as you would have then. The transference of that, like, it's kind of wild how well it fits into now. So I hope that this is accessible to people who either have not been exposed or have been exposed and not understood or have felt uncomfortable or in a similar way of feeling like Shakespeare is for a certain type of person, because that's just simply not, you know, there's so much to gain from it. And I hope too that this production of it, you know, Mark spoke on this, but about how, you know, the greatest cuckold is calamity, right? So to tell yourself that, oh, it's not worth it, or I'm going through this thing, I can't possibly see the light because I'm in the dark right now. Get that away from me. I hope that people are able to see a myriad of emotions in this production and to go along with the characters, and that it's not just a joyous thing. It's also, it speaks to the heartache that we all go through. If I can say one thing really quick, it was interesting. You said that you started this podcast, you know, at the start of COVID, right? 2020. I think that we didn't talk about it at the time, but I think our company has essentially been working on, we've been like the goal since the shutdown has been to have this type of production, to celebrate theater and to celebrate heartache and to celebrate grief and the light. So this is, and the fact that there's so many of us involved in this production and we're able to do such a big, take off such a big bite is kind of a celebration right now. So I'm very excited to get this piece up and running and to have anyone who wants to laugh and cry and feel the things come to you.
The second part of our interviews, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start by asking the two of you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or just some of your favorites? And Mark, can I start with you on that, please?
You know, it seems like it should be such an easy question that one thinks about every day or whatever, you know. And I probably have pretty pat, boring answers that one would hear a lot. I feel really excited to work because Shakespeare is very inspiring to me. The simple answer is working with Shakespeare inspires me, and people that spend their lives doing the research that helps us appreciate it even more inspires. I feel like I came to theater, which has really defined my life, a little bit later than a lot of theater kids. You know, I saw my first play when I was kind of late in my undergraduate experience. That was a play by Tennessee Williams called Night of the Iguana. And I had never experienced anything like that before. It really, really, really moved me. The people that were delivering, you know, the work on stage and working together so beautifully. And of course, what the writer was saying and with such deep empathy for the suffering human beings in the play. And that all together made me want to somehow, in some capacity, even if I was just working the box office, I wanted to be around these people, these kinds of people. Well, I don't know. I didn't know what my role would ever be, but I just wanted to be there more. And I went back and I watched it again and again. And this was a college campus show. And so, you know, when I'm asked that, like, what, you know, who inspires me, and I always feel new to it, even though I'm, you know, that's 30 years ago. And I've made my life. I'm a theater professor now. I'm a playwright. I'm a member of all the unions, et cetera. I've done a lot of stuff, and I'm very blessed to have had those opportunities, just like this one. But I still feel like I'm stumbling into things I never knew about, writers that I never knew about, you know, performances that I didn't see. There are particular works that really, you know, changed things for me. Ibsen's work, Chekhov's work, you know, and for sure. But again, that kind of sounds like a boring answer, because that's the typical, like, you know, theater 101 list of plays you have to read. But I guess I just, you know, I try to see everything I can, and there could be just completely obscure and anonymous creators that no one ever heard of that inspire me just as much as Hamlet, just because, you know, there was something about it that moved me, or that was new for me. So everything inspires me, I guess, when I'm able to go to a play and read one, it helps me. I'm always looking to improve my own work by experiencing others. So again, I could give you a whole list of writers and plays that I like, but I'll just skip that and say the whole experience has been exciting. I feel like it was not in my life, and then I was 22, and then it was in my life. And so the whole package inspires me. I just feel like it gave me an identity, and it gave me a reason to just, you know, love life more than I even did. Hope that makes sense.
Absolutely. That is a fabulous list of inspirations. Thank you for that. Britt, what about you? What or who inspires you?
Well, I've been doing this thing recently where when I've had a bunch of discussions recently, and I've realized when asked a question like this, I'll start thinking of my answer while the other person is answering. But I'm trying to consciously not do that, to be present and listening. So Mark just inspired me.
Oh, thanks, Britt.
Yeah. When I first moved to New York, again, we didn't have theater. We had my high school every year, the senior class would put on a play that they literally worked on for maybe 3 days, and they'd put it on for 2 days and that was it. There was no theater program. There was no performance aspect in any way, but I knew I wanted to perform. And I had gone to see a play when I was 5 years old, and it was very exciting. Again, it was like a 45 minute drive from our house, and my mom sewed me this green velvet cape with a matching hat to go see this play. And we sat in the third row, and it was Oliver. And I remember seeing the kid, his name is Michael Weatherly, who later, he's still working. I think he's working in Nashville. He played the Artful Dodger. And I was watching him on stage, and the feeling that I had was not, I wanna be the Artful Dodger, but that I wanted to be Michael Weatherly being the Artful Dodger. Like I, it was, and that was, I think, the moment that clicked for me, knowing I wanted to be involved in theater. I played sports throughout my childhood and really loved teamwork. I did not excel at the solo sports. I excelled in big team games, soccer games, baseball games, swimming, the medleys and swimming in your team. And just, I find a lot of joy in working in a group atmosphere. And so coming to New York to pursue acting, I've worked in film. I do love film, but what really inspires me is being surrounded by people who are all kind of collectively working toward some idea or a feeling. And Lucy Sant wrote Low Life. It's a kind of the biography of New York from its birth until, you know, the late, I don't know, I think it's early 1900s. But the piece itself discusses both facts from New York and fiction and all of the rumors that were swirling throughout those years. And I was performing a piece where collectively the actors had to read that book and design a character based on what they found interesting in that book. And we all came up with, like, there were like seven different amazing characters. And through that character development, a script was written. And then that script became a play that we performed for a month in the city. And we were lucky enough to get to perform it at Axis Theater. This was the very first play I'd ever done in New York. And the director knew the company. And so we were gifted the stage when the company wasn't using it. And that piece was kind of the, for me, that was the birth of what I knew theater to be as an actor. The birth of it was you develop these characters very intimately. You work with other people, you get other ideas, you comment on each other. There wasn't a fear of commenting on someone else's character or playing around with each. That kind of thing inspires me. That gets me going. I also feel that way in life. You know, as an actor, you've got 1,000 other jobs in order to continue being on stage. And my work life also thrives when I'm surrounded by other people, not working by myself, not coming up with my own ideas. I find that very difficult. COVID was very difficult to be alone. I know a lot of people, I know it's difficult for everyone, not to say that, but I have a lot of friends who like discovered a lot about themselves and had a wonderful time like crafting and doing, and I was losing my mind not being around people. Absolutely losing my mind. Like, I don't find joy in being in my own head. I want my head to be part of a bigger hive. So really just others that inspire me. Yeah, there's a guy, Zach Zucker, or his performance name is Zach Zucker. And he has this kind of, I don't know which, it's like what is the word for it? What's the word where you have a bunch of different acts all in one show under one roof, but they're all like,
variety show?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, sure.
A bunch of different, aka variety. He has a variety show called Stamp Town. And the show is so brilliant. And it's like confined chaos. And I saw it, I've seen it now 5 or 6 times. They're all always different, performs a lot at the Bell House. But at the end of his show, I found myself crying. I was crying at the end of a improv comedy variety show. And it's because all these people, there's so much love that was happening on stage. And yeah, so that in particular has been super inspirational.
What a fabulous list as well. That's amazing. Thank you for that. And it leads now to my favorite question to ask guests, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
My favorite theater memory, and I have many, so I could have chosen a bunch, you know, from a big pool of wonderful theater memories, but I'll choose this one because we're doing a Shakespeare play. And so this was really like probably my first, really the end of my first or beginning of my second year in New York after college and trying to be an actor and sending headshots to backstage, or, you know, backstage calls and showcases and 8th Avenue black boxes and whatever. And, you know, after I told that story before, I felt like this was all very new. I knew very little. I was just trying to catch up as a theater kid, like, you know, just trying to take it all in, see everything I could, read everything I could. But I felt really new, really strange, trying to just crash this party that I've discovered in my life. So I did book a few, if that's even the word, book a few of these showcase operations. This is pre-web series, pre, you know, email. This is, we're talking 1995 or something. And everything was done in person. You had to invite agents and casting directors to come see you. You met people because they saw you in something, usually, right? And so you just had to get out there as much as possible. So I did a couple of these small, like, showcased things at, you know, when in 15 seat, 20 seat, 30 seat little houses. And a director named Delos Brown, he was NYU and Juilliard Shakespeare teacher, just went on to become a dear friend of mine, lifelong friend, was at one of these showcases. And he was producing with his company a season, and he was going to produce a Shakespeare play, Love's Labour's Lost. This was his bread and butter. He's a Shakespeare person. And it was up at the old Riverside Shakespeare Theater, up that Riverside Church that had a theater in the balcony. And he approached me and asked me if I was interested in being in that play. And he gave me the role that I would play in Love's Labour's Lost. It was like one of the young lovers. And I was so excited that I said, yes, that's so great. You know, I've never heard of the play. Maybe like I read and saw like one Shakespeare play in my college career, but I was so excited. I think it's still there. The Barnes and Noble on like up near 86th Street on the west side of the 70s. Maybe it's not there anymore. And I remember the theater wasn't that far from there. So I just ran directly to Barnes and Noble to get a copy of Love's Labour's Lost. And I ran inside and I found, you know, a paperback copy of Love's Labour's. And I immediately, as I was sort of walking toward the checkout, started to, as every actor does, started to flip the pages looking for the name Longaville. That was going to be my role. So I'm just looking for his lines, of course. That's how most of us first read a play when we're cast. And next thing I knew, I was like on Amsterdam. Like I never paid for the book. I just walked out reading Shakespeare and looking for Longaville's lines. And I came to my senses so excited because he had like 50 lines, you know, he had like, it was a great part. But after I probably almost getting hit by a few cars and taxis, I realized that I hadn't paid for the book. I just walked out. And I just remember I was, and this is so, so lovely, you know, and innocent and corny, but I didn't want it to start that way. So I ran back and paid for it because I didn't want to start my relationship with Shakespeare like a thief. Although now having become a Shakespeare academic, I think he actually would have loved that. And maybe I should have just kept going and kept stealing even. But anyway, that's something I just thought of when you asked that today.
Wow, what a fantastic memory. I love that. Thank you. Britt, how about you? What is your favorite theater memory?
I guess I probably have two that stick out. One being the show that I told you about, that was based on the book Low Life, the New York show. In it, my character, there's all these rumors running around throughout the play that my character does spooky stuff, like has killed a bunch of people, has the ability to walk up walls, slices people up the back just to steal their clothes, like all these weird little rumors flying around. And it's the whole play builds and builds and builds until the very end. I actually do walk up a wall. And it was the like trick that happened, the experience of literally being horizontal and walking up a wall to this crescendo music, like it was an awesome experience anyway on its own. That's a great memory. But this night in particular, my dad had driven up from Alabama with my younger brother and three of his friends in like a giant van. And they stayed at this cheap hotel down by the World Trade Center and came up to see the show. And the night that they saw the show was the same night that Randall Sharp, the director at Axis, saw the show. And she barreled past my dad, not knowing it was my family, barreled past my dad, came up to me, grabbed my hand and said, I'm Randall Sharp.
She would have done that even if she knew it was your dad.
Even if she knew it was my dad, exactly. Came straight up, introduced herself and said, I think this, now I've said this to her and she claims she didn't say this, but I think she said, I'm Randall Sharp. I want to get to know you. And I was like, oh, okay, okay. And then the next thing I knew, I got a call to come in and read for the show that they were going to be bringing to Edinburgh. But it was so cool to have that experience in front of my dad and in front of my brother as like a, it was like a little icing on the cake of, look, I did this show. Look, come see me in a show. I'm doing the thing that I said I was going to do. And then I leveled up. And then from that, so then from the Edinburgh show, I got my equity card. And so things just kind of started rolling. But then the other fun story is, and this one is like, this just speaks to my generation. The movie I watched more than any other movie as a child was, well, now, of course, I can't think of the name of it, Princess Bride. We quoted it. We performed the piece in our home, like amongst my siblings and I. And that show that I got my equity card for, we came back from Edinburgh and we performed it. I think, Mark, you were involved in this because you were the understudy for Jim's character, for Mose.
Glance at New York.
Yeah. So we came back and we did Glance at New York in the theater. And sitting in the front row was Wallace Shawn. And I could not handle, we're like bowing, we're taking our curtain call. And I see Wallace Shawn and I hear his like laughing. And I almost lost it. I mean, I could have absolutely just started bawling on stage. And that was like, again, not to keep pushing this, but being from a really tiny town in the middle of nowhere and having like that first big show, you see the celebrity from your childhood in the front row was just, it was wild. It was a truly wild experience. But that was really cool. That set the stage for now, you know, Wallace Shawn could come see this and I would just think it was a normal day.
I love those. Those are incredible. Yes. Both of those are amazing. Thank you both so much for those memories. Well, as we wrap things up, I would love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
No, you know, I this is the project I'm working on now. Let's see. I have some older plays of mine being done, but nothing new right now. I'm taking my time in working on a new play, but that's it for now. If so, you know, if anyone's looking for a play that has seven male actors written by a middle-aged white guy, I'd love you to contact me because I know that's hot right now.
I love that. Brit, anything for you?
I mean, I don't have anything coming down, but I will take this moment that just since we've been, you know, talking about COVID so much, or rather I have, during that time, I found this inside an old art kit that my boyfriend found on the street. He brought home this art kit, like a children's art box, right? And inside of it, I opened it up to just start drawing. I don't know, because it's losing my mind. And in it, I found writing by a little girl. With a drawing and a picture and a song. She wrote a song for her aunt and her mom so that they didn't, quote, die alone. And the song is called Jenna is Love. And it's just, you know, it's writing by this little girl. And I thought, I've got a lot of musician friends. I wonder if I post about this, if anybody, wouldn't it be cool if we could turn this song into an actual song? So I posted on Instagram. And I think because everybody, you know, everybody was at home, I got so many responses and like 9 different people sent me recordings that they made of the song. And I thought, well, what if I send these recordings to painters and artists and I have them paint something inspired by the song? And then, well, what if I send those paintings to dancers and I have them choreograph something based on the painting? What if I send the dance to... So I did this kind of like game of artistic telephone and I got a ton of responses back and I set it up on a website so people could look at it. I'm still looking for Jenna Brown, the little girl who drew the thing, because I think it would be probably the coolest thing in the world for her to see how many people she inspired by this found a bit of writing. But I would love if anybody wanted to visit the website to look at all the work that people put in. There's like 37 different artists contributed to this work. It's Jenna is Love, JenaIsLove.com. And that's like a labor of love. That's a real fun project that would be really cool if people wanted to check it out.
You are breaking my heart. Oh my gosh, that is adorable. I was hoping you were going to say, and then we found Jenna. And I was like,
I wish. I know she's somewhere in my neighborhood, but she might have moved. I don't know. I've got to find her.
That's lovely, though. Thank you.
Yeah.
My final question for the two of you is, if our listeners would like more information about 12th Night or about either of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you, how can they do so?
The company is Axis Company, easy to Google, AXIS, and you'll see, you know, all the press releases and links to tickets and the calendar and all of that on their website, Axis Company. And yeah, I have a website, markpalmieri.com. Bootleg website, my daughters call it, but that's I'm easily reached and found anywhere. But thank you for having me, Andrew.
Yes. Anything for you, Britt?
Yeah, you could find me on Instagram or my website. Both are Britt Jenelin, thebrittjenelin.com, and my Instagram handle is Britt Jenelin.
Well, Mark, Britt, thank you so much for taking the time to stop by and speak with me, sharing this wonderful new production and some amazing insight with great memories to boot. This has been so lovely. So thank you both so much for your time.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been awesome.
Thank you so much.
My guests today have been Mark Palmieri, the dramaturg and script adapter for our show today, as well as the performer playing the role of Viola, Britt Jenelin. They are part of Axis Theatre Company's presentation of 12th Night, playing April 24th through May 25th at the Axis Theatre. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting axiscompany.org. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting in our episode description as well as on our social media posts. But make sure you come out. It's a wonderful theater in the West Village, a beautiful show they've got going on. It's 12th Night, playing April 24th through May 25th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.